Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. It's Bish, EB, and JP hanging out today. Cakes will join us in about 45 minutes. He's in Vegas. He has survived 2 days in the World Series of Poker, so we'll get an update from Cakes. But joining us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude's the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's Barry's Verluga from the Washington Post. Hey, Barry.
Hey, guys.
How are you, buddy? What a day yesterday was, right?
Head spinning, yeah. I mean, you guys know how long Mike Rizzo has run that baseball department, and you know, we can talk about whether it was deserved or not, but you just, that news pops in and you take a deep breath and say, wow, they really did it. And you know, his life is different and Davey's life is different and the franchise is different. So pretty monumental day for that team.
Hey, as a reporter, what's a standard Sunday night like yours after, you know, a Nats game that ends at 4-ish, and then when something comes out like that, I mean, it just becomes an all-nighter.
Yeah, so, you know, you put down the fish tacos that you were making for dinner and wash your hands and head to the laptop. You know, I was texting and talking with some execs, you know, from across the game after filing a column about, you know, kind of assessing the job and what kind of person would be good, who's out there that would be good, and what has to be done to turn around, not just, you know, yeah, they got swept by the Red Sox and they had an 11-game losing streak, but kind of the underlying problems that have gotten them to this position, which I know we've talked about, had a lot to do with drafting and developing, which they really haven't done for the better part of a decade. So really, really important decision going forward. Obviously, I really think that the general manager or the president of baseball operations that they put in place should be able to hire his manager. And it really will be kind of revealing how the learners handle the GM search. They have had a slew of execs from different areas in their business leave for other jobs over the past couple of years. And in almost every case, they've just bumped up whoever was behind them and not, you know, gone out and try to figure out who the best and the brightest out there are. I don't think they can do that in baseball ops. And that's not to say Mike DiBartolo isn't deserving of a shot. He's a really thoughtful executive and has been there a long time and knows the good and the bad that's under the hood there. But he has to be put up against a list of qualified candidates who are allowed to come in and make their own presentations. And really, they should be seeking opinions from all across the sport because this is a major, major hire, and they haven't done that for whatever it is, 17 years since they put Rizzo in charge.
Barry, I remember when we had you on a few weeks ago, and we talked about the Nats a little bit and Rizzo, and I think you referred to Mike as like he's kind of like the furniture over there, right? He's been around for so long, and you alluded in this column that you wrote last night, that you kind of got the sense when you met with him in spring training that maybe people were a little too comfortable. You know, didn't feel that comfortable writing about it, but that was the sense you had. I know we had Chelsea on earlier, and she talked about this, the lack of urgency she felt maybe that was there when you compare a team like the Tigers. Talk about that kind of instinct that you had in spring training, why you didn't write it, why you thought that, and just how we got to this point.
So, yeah, and I, you know, in some ways I feel bad not writing that at the time because it sounds like kind of retrofitting the situation. But, you know, I as a columnist now with the team where it is in its development, like, I'm not going down to spring training twice for like 10 days at a time. I went down there once. I was there for, I think, 6 days of reporting. And I just, even though I sensed that, I felt like, man, like, there's everybody, and I don't even just mean Rizzo and Davey in terms of feeling comfortable. I thought the players took that cue, and like, you're C.J. Abrams and you're coming off getting banished at the end of last year. Like, you're James Wood and you're about to be a star, but no one it didn't feel like a competition, and I meant that kind of throughout the up and down the organization. But again, I held back because, you know what, I'm not going to get that sense over 6 days. They hadn't even, I left and they were just starting to play games. Like, mm-hmm. I could have been wrong. But in retrospect, I do feel like I was right. And that's some of a reflection on Rizzo and Davey, but I also think it's more a reflection on ownership because, mm-hmm. you know, they've had this kind of half-in, half-out thing for a while, and even though Mark Lerner sat down with me at spring training and said, you know, we feel like we're going to run this for the foreseeable future, it didn't feel, and it doesn't feel until last night, aggressive, like, how can we make this better? What are we doing that's good? What are we doing that needs improvement? What people do we have in place and positions that we don't have in place should we thinking about? Should we be thinking about? So it just was like, it felt like kind of a malaise. And this move is a chance to change that and not just shuffle the deck, but really dive in and think about, what have we not committed to that would help, that kind of undercut Rizzo and his operation, because he'd tell you that he didn't have all the stuff, not just major league payroll, but, you know, bodies and technology and that kind of thing. That's what they have to kind of explore now, a full scale look at what they do well and what they don't do well and who would help them and what would help them improve in all areas.
Barry, do you get a sense that the learners understand where they stand with the fan base right now? They're not Dan Snyder, because Dan had so many awful things associated with him, but they're the next closest thing right now. They're kind of like enemy number one. Like, people might say, okay, yeah, I could get Rizzo. I mean, you know, haven't won in years, and Davey and whatever, and okay, I can understand it. But man, most of the fan venom is pointed towards the learners, and it has been for several years now.
And I think it should be. And that's, you know, I think a lot of that is easy for fans to do in terms of major league payroll. Like, that's what you look at. They haven't, you know, since the World Series in 2020, they tried to run it back and they spent, and you know, it didn't work in the pandemic, shortened season. But since then, they haven't done that. They haven't been able to do multiple year deals. And Rizzo would tell you that that hamstrings a rebuild, because when they did it the first time, you know, you had young controllable players in place in Ryan Zimmerman and Ian Desmond and Jordan Zimmerman in the core that came up and became the centerpieces in a winning team. But you not only surrounded them with Jason Wirth, who would be there for 7 years, and it was invested in the product, not only that season, but in the seasons going forward, but in smaller deals for Adam LaRoche, people like that, that made it so the clubhouse was all in. And that has, in this rebuild, that's the major difference. Do they have high-end talent in James Wood and C.J. Abrams and Mackenzie Gore and maybe Dylan Cruz? Yeah, they do, but they don't have veterans in there who can say, hey, guys, this is how you're a big leaguer. This is how we develop into a winning team. I'm going to be here not just past this trade deadline, but for years and years to come. And not doing that is on the learners. And I think pulling the plug on Rizzo and Davey was, I think it was the right time. But if they think that's going to take the heat off them, I think it turns the heat up on them more, because now they've got to make a decision about who's going to do this. And they've got to show that they're committed both in major league payroll and in building up the front office staff appropriately.
Talking to Barry Zwerluga from The Washington Post, we talked to your colleague Chelsea Janes earlier in the show, and I was trying to get at this, and maybe you have a little more insight. You know, when we talk about the learners being the owners, what does it look like? How are they involved in, like, the day-to-day operations, if they are? Who's at the office? Is it just Mark Lerner? How does this all go down?
So it's a really interesting question, JP, and I think it's important that you kind of you get under the hood here and see how different they are from most major league organizations. So Mark Lerner is the point person for ownership. He's the person who's technically in charge, but they do almost everything by consensus with the two Ted Lerner sons-in-laws, Ed Cohen and Bob Tannenbaum, as well as Mark's sisters, Deborah Cohen and Marla Tannenbaum. Like, that's how they, it's one of the reasons it's been difficult to make decisions since Ted's death in February 2023 is because there's no North Star anymore. Like, they took his word and his guidance, and that was the most important thing. And he almost created consensus by default because he was such a powerful figure that they almost all revered. And so the other aspect is they had Stan Kasten as a team president when they took the ownership group, when they took over ownership in 2006. And since Kasten left in, I think it was 2011, he's been with the Dodgers since then, they have not had a forward-facing kind of point person to oversee all of baseball operations and the business side of things. And so that's another way that they're half in. There's a COO of Lerner Sports. His name is Alan Gottlieb. He's never forward-facing. He's not somebody you go to say, how is this decision made? What are you going to do next? And he has a pretty significant role with Lerner Enterprises, which means he's not at the ballpark all the time. He's not 100% leading the Nationals. And if you're a department head at the Nationals, you kind of don't know, you know, when are you going to have Alan's attention? Does he have authority to approve stuff? It's a lot easier for him to say no than yes. So it's just, it's not a normal operation, and that's their prerogative. If they think they have a better way to do it, that's fine. I do think it's yielded the results that have led them to fire their field manager and their general manager, because it just feels like they're half in a lot of ways.
Right. So that leads into my next question. Is it your opinion, Barry, that whoever takes over as GM, whether it's DeBartolo or someone else outside, that they will be dealing with the same restrictions that Mike has been dealing with since the COVID year?
Well, and that's the question, Eric. I mean, I'm sorry.
Jace. That was me,
yeah,
Jason.
Sorry.
Sorry. So, it's okay.
It's a big...
You had a long night.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a big question for anybody that comes in for an interview. Like, I think these conversations, if you're a potential candidate, have to be hard questions both ways because, you know, at some level, if the learners are going to use this opportunity to up their commitment into building a proper front office and a proper baseball operations department, well, that's too bad for Mike Rizzo, who didn't have that since the COVID years, for sure. I mean, he should have been afforded that opportunity with those resources. That being said, if you're coming in for an interview, and this includes if you're Mike DeBartolo, you have to ask them, what is your commitment to building this up to what it needs to be? Here's what I need in terms of data analysis, in terms of positions that are, you know, responsible for really nitty gritty stuff. And we're talking about like guys right out of college who would make $60,000-$70,000 a year, but are responsible for analyzing defensive catching across the major leagues. Like, there are other organizations that do exactly that. There are other organizations that at the major league level say, you are not taking a proper lead off of first base. You were at 11 feet. We need you at 13 feet. If you're going first to third, here's the angle that you need to go in at second. Like, those things aren't happening. And that kind of nitty gritty stuff takes people and process and resources. So if you're a candidate for this job, I don't think you want to take the job if you know you're going to be hamstrung before you get into the seat. Like, you want to know you're going to be properly funded and have a chance to compete with the best in the sport.
Well, we had Rizzo on last week, and your colleague wrote about this in the Washington Post. They're one of a few teams in Major League Baseball that doesn't have that arc technology. Yeah.
I mean, we asked him about that too.
Yeah, correct. And Mike, you know, what Mike did for so many years in having to answer questions for ownership. Like, he protected them because he did a really good job of managing up. I once had another GM say, who has the hardest job in baseball in managing up? I would go with, this GM was saying, I would go with Brian Cashman dealing with the Steinbrenners, and then I would go with Mike Rizzo dealing with the Lerners. Like, that's the kind of dysfunction that people across the game thought this was. So to bring it back to your point, JP, the about the technology, like, on the Junkies on Wednesday morning, Mike Rizzo is not going to throw the Lerners under the bus and say
he never did.
Yeah, they don't fund that kind of thing. It's $500,000 that would be really, really helpful. He's going to say we have technology. It's not for everybody, but for some people it can really help. Like, it's a tough. There's a reason that when Spencer Nussbaum, our one of our beat writers, did that story, that Rizzo didn't comment, because the comments are not going to reflect well on what ownership is allowing him to explore. Now, I'm not saying that Mike Rizzo was like, you know, we need that technology. I'm not sure he was, but it's true that they don't spend like other people spend on things that are helping other franchises excel, and that just puts you behind. This franchise is behind in a lot of ways. Some of that has to do with Mike Rizzo and his baseball operations department's drafting and developing, but not all of it does. The bigger arrow points to ownership here.
So how attractive is the position if they're going to be dealing with that same nonsense that Mike dealt with?
Well, unless ownership is able to sit down and say, hey, we know we haven't done our jobs very well since the pandemic, and because we're committed to keeping this team, we know it takes a different commitment from us, not just in Major League payroll, but in all the elements that we've talked about up to this point. And you know, if they're not saying that to incoming candidates, and those candidates are being told, you know, we're not going to increase spending in personnel and technology and all the stuff you need to compete, then it's not a very attractive job. But in talking to and texting with some other execs who might be interested last night, in the right circumstances with the right level of commitment, like, it's an extremely attractive job. Like, you could this market has shown it can compete when it's funded properly. They've won not just the World Series in 2019, but from 2012 to 19, only the Dodgers won more regular season games than this place. So, you know, it really depends. The attractiveness of the job really depends on how the learners can articulate and commit to what they're going to do differently than they have been over the last several years.
Hey, Mike, or Barry, I'm sorry, in 20 seconds or less, like, do we have any indication that there was an ultimatum given to Mike where they were like, we need you to let go of Davey, and he just refused to do it?
No, I don't have that at all. And I really think, Eric, that if you pull the string and say, hey, we're going to fire Davey, like, the arrow goes pretty quickly to Mike. But like, why? Well, the on-field performance stinks, but so does the drafting and developing. So I think they were a package deal.
Yeah, they kind of became one, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Barry, good stuff.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Barry.
Barry's Valuga from the Washington Post. Again, we have a poll up. Did the Nationals make the right move by firing both Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo? You can vote at Junks Radio. Coming up next, we'll open up EB's entertainment page here on the Junkies. Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. Remember, you miss any of the show, you can always download the podcast wherever you download your podcasts, whether it's on Apple, Spotify. Just search the term Sports Junkies and you can grab our podcast. All right, let's open up the entertainment page. Got Cakes joining us in about 15 minutes.
That's great.
From Vegas for a World Series of Poker update.
Poor guy, he's not getting any sleep. He's back at it today, right? Back at
the table? I think
he's
off today.
Oh, they have an off day? Oh, good.
I think.
All right, the entertainment page, driven by BMW Fairfax, DC's only BMW Center of Excellence Award winner for the ultimate buying experience on your ultimate driving machine. Get over to BMW Fairfax. Ask for Miriam. She's the general manager. She'll take care of you, I promise. Of course, you can check out their entire selection online at bmwfairfax.com. When you get there, make sure you mention me. Promise, they're going to treat you like a rock star. All right, Drabby mentioned it. He went to see F1, which was, I believe, number one at the box office last weekend, but it fell to number two because Jurassic World Rebirth was number one domestically, did $147 million over the 5 days of the 4th of July weekend. It's the fourth installment of the Jurassic World series. Did you guys have Kevin on to talk about it? I can't remember. What did he say? Positive or negative?
I think he liked it.
He did?
Four out of five,
I
maybe?
I think it was
four out of five.
Four.
Let me see. The box office is up more than 14% year to date compared to last year. I know they had a slow start to 2025, but F1... did $26 million domestically. That was a 54% drop. It opened last week to about $55 million. And so far, it's made about $144 million worldwide. I guess the next big deal will be Superman, which opens in theaters. Is it next week? I think it's next week. And they expect Superman to go over $100 million in its opening weekend. So movies are back. People are going
there's
to
some
theater.
Big ones. Yeah,
some big ones out there.
Do you know how much Regal Rockville charges for a soda? A small,
I would say probably $6.50,
$8.99.
Oh my god,
that's for a small. And then a large is what, like 10? Like yes. It's just like another dollar. You just get the large. I mean, it's all so silly. If you go to a movie and you pay just regular like $18 a ticket, whatever it is, and you get a popcorn and a soda, it's going to cost you $40.
Yeah,
probably easy per person.
And you bring your whole family, it's $150.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's literally crazy. But there is nothing.
I would
like
definitely try and bring some stuff in.
You go to the dollar store.
Yeah, I'm not spending $10 on a drink.
The problem is the popcorn. You can't really smuggle popcorn in.
No, that's true.
And
I don't need the popcorn, but you're right.
At the Dallas Convention Center, they had popcorn stands everywhere, and everyone was buying the popcorn because the smell is overwhelming. You can't help yourself. Netflix, by the way, this is interesting. I don't even quite know what it is. You guys are going to mock me. I mean, I kind of know, but not really. Netflix says now 50% of their global users watch anime. Now, anime to me just means like cartoon. Like, I don't know what it means beyond that. What is anime in essence?
I think it's a type of cartoon.
It's a type of cartoon. It's like a kind of like a realistic type of cartoon-ish, if there's such a thing.
It's Japanese cartoons.
Japanese cartoons.
It's Japanese-based.
Okay. So more than 50% of its members amounting to over 150 million households, or an estimated 300 million viewers now watch anime. Can you imagine? Let me see. 33 anime titles appeared in Netflix's global top 10 rankings, more than double the number in 2021. Who knew? I mean, I've never watched anime. I'm not interested in anime.
So out on that.
I mean, I know the anime. I think an anime porn is interesting to some people. I don't know. It's like the whole anime thing. I don't get it. Do they speak English in the anime? If it's Japanese cartoons,
some can be English. Some are Japanese with English translations,
subtitles, etc.
Yes.
Yeah. While I was away, did you guys talk? Obviously, you talked about the Diddy verdict. I think that came out, maybe Wednesday or Thursday or something?
Yep.
I guess, did they say that Diddy got down on his hands and knees and was...
He was hugging the chair.
He was hugging the chair.
Well, that's what they said.
And he was, I guess he mouthed thank you to the jurors. I
mean, he avoided all the major charges.
He avoided all the major charges, yeah, for sure. I saw one of his attorneys say they thought he'd be out in less than a year. He might even get out for time served whenever they go back.
Yep.
Now, I also did see that there's other stuff they might have cooked up for him. But, got to say, great job by his dream team. I think he had 8 or 9 lawyers.
Looked like it.
8 or 9 lawyers. And they said that their whole plan was just acknowledged that he was a jealous domestic abuser with a drug problem who participated in a swinger lifestyle, including threesomes, but that he wasn't some sort of racketeering guy running
a
prostitution ring.
That's what we talked about. I said all along, look, he's a bad dude. But you can't just go to jail for being a bad dude.
They couldn't.
Now, he can go to jail for some of those other things, being a domestic abuser or whatever. But racketeering and some of these other big charges, I didn't know if the prosecution was proving their case. Then again, I was mostly learning from your entertainment page.
They do say.
But you pretty much nailed it.
This is the story this morning that when Diddy got back to prison, he got a standing ovation from his fellow inmates. They were sized for him.
You know what he should do? I mean, I don't like the guy. He seems to be a despicable human being.
Yeah.
But to kind of taunt everyone, he should throw a party when he comes out.
Welcome home party.
Yes. Yeah. Diddy party?
Yes.
Like a clean Diddy party, though.
I don't know. Have the baby oil, just like taunt people. Have like baby oil outside.
Playing with fire there.
Playing with fire, buddy. Like have all the
mattresses. I'm not saying hire prostitutes or anything like that.
But. Right.
I don't know if it'd be well attended.
Yeah, you can't go. Like, nobody could go. There's a video, I know you guys saw it, like, shortly before, like, a couple weeks before he was arrested. He was at some party, like, after party for the Grammys or something, and he was just sitting there at a table amongst all these celebrities. Everyone was ignoring him. Mm-hmm. He was persona non grata before he was even arrested. Like, it was bad. I think not sure if that point, if the Cassie video had come out. I think the Cassie video had come out. And people were just like, yeah, staying away.
They want to know part of it.
They want to know part of it. There's a story.
I still can't believe he didn't serve any jail time for beating her up on video.
I'm not sure he's been charged with that.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
He wasn't charged with it, but he should have been.
Yeah, probably.
Can you imagine how many times he did that?
No. No, I can't imagine. I guess his lawyer said the first thing he's going to do is reenter a rehab program.
All he did is publicly apologize. That's all he did.
Can he get back in the public good graces? I thought Michael Vick had no shot. I thought he was enemy number one, you know, with the animal stuff. No shot. And Vick has reentered and been accepted.
Yeah, he's got a job.
I think Diddy is in
it's
the
different
old...
with dogs.
He's in the Harvey Weinstein...
There's no coming back from this?
I don't think so.
Plus, Michael...
What if he just says, hey, listen, I had demons. I had a lot of problems. I was addicted to drugs. I've done 6 months in a drug rehab center. I'm dedicating my life now to helping abused women.
He may...
You don't think that works?
He may do some things professionally, but I put him in... You know, the same department as Weinstein, Kevin Spacey. Like, there's just some guys that...
There's no rehab.
Bill Cosby, another one.
Kevin Spacey's back.
I said he might do some things professionally, but I don't know that the public...
Ever really accepts him.
They've kind of accepted Michael Vick.
Like, way more than I ever thought. Way more.
Redeemed himself.
Well, he also served jail time.
Yeah, so is Diddy.
Well...
He's been in jail for like a year.
Yeah, that's true, but he wasn't... He wasn't sentenced to jail.
Well, he's been now.
But he has.
Been,
you're right.
Yeah, now he's going to.
But it's
be
almost
sentenced.
Like Vic paid his penalty. You know, paid the price, and then he got back. Yeah. But it's. I mean, he was beating up women.
I get it.
Plus, Vic came
Chris
back.
Chris Brown.
There's been a lot of celebrities. A lot of rock stars have beaten up women.
Vic came back and played well too.
That's why I think that he's not going to be able to.
Who,
Vic? Anybody's good graces.
Well, he just had a pretty remarkable post-playing career.
That too.
You know, we've had him on the show. I thought he was charming. That was great. Remember what a psycho his brother was? His brother was bad news. Marcus.
I don't even remember what Marcus did.
Marcus was a handful, I think. Travis Kelce's in the news. He did the Bustin' with the Boys podcast, and he talked about how when he was preparing to host this Saturday Night Live in 2023, it was fun, but it was kind of a debacle. He says he had a difficult time. Most difficult time was with the table reading because, frankly, he struggles reading.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last week.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I don't know why I find it so funny.
Travis Kelce can't read.
Yeah, that Travis Kelce can't read.
No, I'm sure he could read, but it's probably
exaggerating.
Big dumb jock.
Probably a little bit. I think that looks like a tough situation. A table reading.
That's kind of nerve-wracking, too.
Table readings?
Well, yeah, you're reading.
You're not an actor.
You're not an actor. You're with all these sillies. Yeah. I mean, reading publicly is kind of hard at any point.
Yeah, sure.
Let alone in front of big sillies.
You ever read at like a wedding or something? Or you get a little bit nervous. right?
Yeah. I'll read you guys something on the air here, and it's hard enough sometimes.
Yeah, of course, with everybody. We talked about Ozzy and Black Sabbath for the final concert. That seemed to go off pretty well. And then last but not least, I don't know if you guys talked about this, but I guess Katy Perry was out. Did you see this, Valdez? Katy Perry was out and about in a bikini. She got a revenge body out there already. Orlando Bloom was out there hollering. Boom. Now you got bikini pics from Katy Perry.
Hmm. Such a predictable game.
So predictable, right? So predictable.
All right, coming up next, we're going to connect with Cakes, who's in Vegas for the World Series of Poker. We'll find out how he's doing next here on The Junkies. Remember, you miss any part of the show, you can always grab our podcast wherever you download your podcasts, whether it's Spotify, iHeart, Apple. Grab the podcast. Just search the term Sports Junkies. We had Chelsea James from The Washington Post and Barry Zvaluga on The Washington Post, both with some great insight about Mike Rizzo's dismissal and Davey Martinez's dismissal. I guess we'll find out today who will manage the Nationals later. But joining us right now from Sin City is our pal John Martin Auville, known as Cakes.
Shouldn't you be sleeping, brother?
What's up, boys? Yeah, I mean, I just woke up like 10 minutes ago. You think I'm not going back to sleep?
Yeah.
What else am I going to do on a day off here?
Hey, address one of the tweets you put out there. You said a guy offered you coke.
Yeah, you didn't say if you accepted it.
Well, I responded to like 20 people who asked me if I did it, and of course I said no. Of course, I mean, I've done weed back in the day, but I've never dabbled with the coke, so yeah. I politely declined his more than generous offer.
Very nice, very nice.
So what's it been like, man? Take us through it, like when you arrived there, when you actually first, you were debating whether you were going to play on the 4th of July or the day after. I think you chose after, right?
No, I actually played on July 4th.
Oh, you did?
I just felt like, yeah, I felt like I was, you know, rested and refreshed enough to just go that next day. So I played day one, and, you know, nothing crazy, you know, a decent amount of ups and downs, but I got a bag of, I think, $52,300, which wasn't a huge stack, but look, this whole thing is survive in advance. It's just getting a bag and going to the next day. You know, so no real noteworthy hands in that day that I can recall. But day two was just wild. I mean, the swing.
Well, hold on before you get to day two. How long did you play? How long did you play? When did you start day one, and when did you get off the tables day one?
Oh, you start. They play 5 2-hour levels each day. There's a 20-minute break after each level, and after the third level, there's a 75-minute dinner break. So you're starting at
noon.
That's
a pretty good break, because back when we used to do the poker open,
so it's
you
a 12,
like 15
it's a 12,
minutes.
It's a 12-hour day, yeah. Easy.
Oh, yeah. You start at high noon, and if you bag, you're bagging your chips at like 12:15 a.m.
Right.
It's a grind. I mean, it's surreal, though. Like, watching it on TV doesn't do it justice as far as like how big the fields are and how big these convention center rooms are.
They're massive.
They're nothing but just poker players as far as the eye can see.
Right. So, did you have any celebrity run-ins like Jeff McCauley or Barstool Nate?
I did. I've seen McCauley a few times, and it was funny. Last night, like I was trying to get back to my room to charge my phone a little bit because my portable charger died on a break. And McCauley grabs me in like the hallway, which is couldn't be busier with just poker players scurrying around, vaping, trying to get out and smoke a cigarette during the break. McCauley gives me his bad beat exit story and wastes like four precious minutes of my 20-minute break.
You should have blown him off.
I mean, I was fine to listen, but time was short. You know what I mean?
All right. You know what? Our time is short. I want to just get – so just following it from afar. And by the way, Dina's locked in. She's checking for chip updates. She's all in with you, brother. It seemed like day one, you're kind of card dead. You're just staying right around your starting stack, which is fine. Like, you hung in there. Yeah. It really is a test of your patience. How have you managed that? In the day two, it seemed like you got a couple hands, and fortunately, you went up against some hands, and you're able to double up, and you're sitting pretty nice right now. How difficult has it been for you to stay patient?
You know what? I think that's just a hallmark of my style. I can withstand the hour and a half of just dead cards. You know what I mean? And just wait for that opportunity. Like you said on day one, there weren't a lot of real spots for me there. But in day two, like I got involved with a super aggressive European player who had a bunch of chips, and I jammed on with queens on the turn. And all he had was a diamond draw. He didn't even have an overcard, you know, to fall back on. And I got a huge double up there. Mm. And I also flopped a boat when I was holding pocket tens. And the guy had a deuce and two deuces on the board. He had ace deuce. He went broke.
Right.
So I mean, those are the spots
massive.
You need to, you know,
massive.
Yeah, they're huge. And I'm not sure about this, but I think I might get some TV time tomorrow because nice. I'm in the feature room.
Are you
tomorrow?
Nice. What is
you
that?
You gonna wear something special?
Well, he's got gear. He's got gear.
I know
wearing.
He's got a patch, but are you gonna wear something special?
I'm gonna wear some MGM National Harbor gear. I believe, of course, I have my Gulf Coast Poker patch. And,
he's not gonna wear like the duck outfit or whatever, you know.
No, I know that.
He just wants Fossil Man.
Yeah.
He wants him to wear junky stuff. That's what he wants them to wear.
I've got a Surfside iced tea and vodka hat. I think that's
nice.
My go-to.
That works.
That's a good sponsors one, baby.
Yeah, that works.
I'm open for sponsorship.
So hold on. You're in the feature room. I've seen feature table before. I've been there to the World Series. I've seen the main event. I've railed it. How do you know if you're going to be at the top table or not?
I don't know. I think I know I'm in that room because they have the rooms broken down by like colors, and that's like the bronze room. I was in the red room yesterday. So, I'm like maybe getting some Poker Go feature coverage tomorrow. So,
how many total entries were there? Was it about 10,000?
I think it's over 9,000 at this point.
And how many are left?
I don't know that total number because the next day two is today.
Oh, okay.
Right.
The final day two to narrow it down to day three, which is tomorrow.
So feel good. You're in a spot, you're above average, right? In your stack.
Yeah.
How many moves have you had to make? Are you doing a lot of blind stealing?
Not a ton of blind stealing, but you know, got to run a few bluffs here and there. You can't just wait for, you know.
Yeah.
You can't just wait for jacks or better, you know. You got to play some of your suited connectors. You got to, you know.
Right.
You got to three bet here and there to keep people, you know.
Right.
Keep people guessing about your game, stuff like that. But I feel pretty good, man. I can rest today. I can chill. My first day off, I played nothing but poker. I played a deep stack, and then I trolled around in the cash game. I'm not doing that today.
Yeah, go see the Blue Man Group or something, a comedian.
Just whistle all day.
I guess I could do that. I'm guessing
it's been done.
Every day is a new day. Every day is a new day.
All right, well, give us an update midweek. We'll talk to you maybe Wednesday or Thursday.
Well, if you're still alive, of course, I will certainly give updates.
All right, Cakesy, we got to roll.
Great job,
for
pal.
Cakesy, CB, Bishbucks, right, I'm buddy. JP. We'll see you tomorrow. B. Mitch and Finley next here on The Fan.